pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
That is the new record from Kenny Chesney, born. And we feel born again with him in our studio. What an incredible
treat. Good to see you, brother. Pleasure meeting you.
Kenny, I don't know how to thank you enough. I mean, this is, I don't have a single thing prepared other than just saying hello to you, and we'll just talk as long as we can.
No, we'll talk as long as you want. It's great to be here. I watch you all the time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I do.
I have this, Al, I'm so proud of it. Kenny was on a couple of years ago, and I've been, I like, every time somebody, the FedEx guy and the Amazon guy come to my house, I leave this in the front door. I'm so proud of it. But you just started your tour last week. Tomorrow night is your second.
We opened our tour last Saturday night at the Buccaneers place in Tampa. And then tomorrow night we play here at the Carolina Panthers place. And it's going wonderful. You know, we just started, so we're going to be rolling down the highway until the end of August. So we still like each other now. It's only been a couple of weeks. So
playing stadiums. You've done it for a long time, but yeah. It. And I know you're such a big sports fan, and we'll get into that. Yeah. And we tried to dig up some video from Gibbs High School, but we couldn't. We're still struggling to find too many big plays of yours. But what's it like when you walk out there and there are so many people who are just so jacked up to see you? It must be an unbelievable feeling.
It really is an unbelievable feeling. You know, for me and all my, I got four or five guys out on the road with me that I went to high school with, and we were all college roommates at East Tennessee State University, and so when. After we graduated college, we all went in different directions. So for me to have those guys out on the road with me to go, we had no idea where this dream was going to take us or me, right? And so I told them, though, I said, if this ever happens to me and for me, I'm going to bring you guys with me. And so it was a really big leap of faith for them when we first started, and to be able to be playing the arenas and the stadiums that we're playing now you couldn't have dreamt it when we were kids, you know, growing up in East Tennessee. You didn't dream these kind of things. So to walk out there on stage and to see those people that care about the music and that care about the experience of all of it is more than I ever dreamt of.
Yeah, I want to go back because I know obviously a little bit about, you know, couldn't help but be from Tennessee to know a little bit about Kenny Chesney. Yeah. But I mean, you grew up right outside of Knoxville. When you played football in high school, you're obviously a big sports fan, but
love it.
Was that how important? I mean, I know it's important because we saw the Boys of Fall a couple of years ago. But how did you balance your interest in music versus your sports interest?
Well, music and sports was all we had. I grew up in an area of East Tennessee. As you know, this was before we had social media and before we had all the different devices that we consume sports on these days. So we had church, we had school, and we had sports, and mainly Tennessee football, you know, and so that's how I grew up. I never knew that music was a part of my life because I heard it in church, and I heard it from my mom and her twin sister, right? But I had no idea that this was going to be a part of my life. It was going to be my life. I thought sports was going to be my life. I wanted to play second base for the Boston Red Sox, right? But I knew pretty quickly that my, you know, high school was going to be it for me.
So you played baseball in high school. You played football.
I played baseball. I played football, and I'm the same size right now as I was in high school. I quit growing when I was a junior.
You were
high
a wide receiver.
I was. I quit. I'm telling you.
110 pounds.
Yeah, but I thought as a junior in high school, I thought, you know, I might be an athlete, but maybe it was something in the water. I don't know, but I'm still the same size.
That's pretty remarkable because I think we all know as we get older, it's not the easiest thing to do. So. But at that moment, you realized quickly, or maybe not too quickly, that sports wasn't going to be it. But you still.
But I love it.
It was.
You know, I got that from my father. You know, my dad was a coach, and I remember going to his games as a kid, and growing up in Knoxville. You know, when you I didn't go to a lot of games, but I didn't have to because I had John Ward. And that was everything to me. You know, you're growing up as a kid in East Tennessee, and I couldn't wait till Sunday morning because they would replay the games and they would have John's voice do the play-by-play. And that's how I consumed sports as a kid. And it was bigger than life to me. And I remember my dad took me to Neyland Stadium as a kid. And I think Tennessee played Notre Dame. And I think that was my first. There was a guy, correct me if I'm wrong, but you'll remember Hubert Simpson.
Yeah, that would have been the late 70s.
Right. Early, yeah. That was my first Tennessee game ever. And I remember walking in the stadium thinking it was bigger than life. Like, there was no, like, this was the best day of my life, you know? And I still get that feeling when I walk in there.
And at what point did this dream of sports intersect with what you ended up doing for the next?
I was in college. You know, I've always had music in my life. I didn't know, like I said, that I was going to be doing it like this. And that it was going to be my life. But it was in college. I went to East Tennessee State University in Johnson City, and I was the guy that you would see if you walked into a bar, or I played a Mexican restaurant called Chucky's Trading Post. And it was in between Johnson City and Irwin, Tennessee.
Sure.
And it was on the river, and people would get off these boats off the river and come in and drink and eat enchiladas, and I was the guy in the corner playing music. And that's how this whole thing started, really.
And I mean, it's a crazy question to ask you if you had any idea what you were doing, because the results will back it up at some point, but right. At the time, you probably didn't.
No, I was just doing what I loved, you know, and still to this day, you know, a lot has changed since those days. But the connection and doing what you love and the connection of the audience is still basically the same, Paul. I've just got a lot more stuff around me. And but that's where it all started. I was in college.
What were growing up? I mean, Knoxville had the big country station.
WIBK, yeah. In Knoxville, yeah. Had that and Tennessee football.
Yeah,
that was it.
And Tennessee football was on WIBK as
that's
well.
Right. Still is.
So, I mean, was there artists that you listened to or your mom?
Yeah, it was an eclectic mix, though. I mean, I grew up, you know, loving country, but I also grew up loving what is now known as classic rock.
Right.
Right. So, I think as a kid, well, first of all, I think as an adult, the music that comes out of you is what you took in as a child.
Right.
And it was such a different, I mean, there were so many different people. And it was usually the people that wrote their songs and recorded, you know, recorded them and went out on stage and gave them to the world. Those were the people that I really was into and attracted to, like Bruce Springsteen and Jimmy Buffett. And it was just so many people that you know, that really opened my mind up, if you will, as a creative person.
So as you're at this Mexican restaurant, what type of music were you playing?
I was playing all covers, all my hero songs. You know, it's funny. That's when I first started to get into trying to write my own songs, you know, and I would try to sneak one of those in there, and that's when everybody, you know, started having the conversation again. And I would have them looking at me, and, you know, I remember that the management at that Mexican restaurant, absolutely, they loved me, but they hated me because I wanted to turn it up a little bit more than they wanted for the dinner crowd, right? But I want them to listen to me. And so we still have it loud out there. If people come to the show, it's loud. That's the way I love it.
I read somewhere that you ended up, after you were in Johnson City, which you ended up, Bristol was next door.
Yeah.
You ended up starting to it. I can't remember what you were doing there, but that's where maybe it all started a little bit.
Well, what I did, I was working at another Mexican restaurant in Johnson City, and I was saving money to try to make a record.
Why there's so many like beer in Mexico?
Yeah, I guess so. But there was a I don't know if it's still there or not, but it was called Classic Recording Studio in Bristol, Tennessee. And I went there to record. I paid for my own first record and sold it when I played out, you know. And that's where the juice started of making your own record and hoping someone cares about it enough to listen to it again, right? And but that was all in Johnson City. And then when I graduated college, all my buddies now that are out on the road with me and living this dream with me, they all went to work, you know, different places for a credit union or whatever. And like I told you earlier, I said, if this happens for me, you're coming. You're going with me. And Paul, we were just happy that we're gonna hopefully get on a bus and go around the country just one time and play the places that our heroes played. And we've been very lucky, man. This is our 30th trip around the sun, if you will.
We're talking to Kenny Chesney, and we're eventually going to get to modern day, but I am just so intrigued by how things like this began. Because, I mean, you've said it a million times, but music takes you back. And yes. so many of your songs take you back to high school, college, younger. And I think it's just so intriguing to try to figure out when it really happened. We'll continue this journey, chatting with Kenny Chesney. So much to get into. His new record, of course, Born. His new hit is Take Her Home. He's only had 35 or 40 number one hits, and we'll talk about, I don't know how you, I'm not sure, I should give you a test to see if you can actually remember every one of them.
There's no way.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And watching during the break of our guests, some of his productions, he's done a couple for ESPN and SEC. There he is with Condridge Holloway, who another special he produced a couple of years ago, and we're going to get to that in a second. I'm just trying to figure out. Okay, at this point in time, you're doing the Mexican restaurants.
Yeah.
How did that end up being Kenny Chesney of today? You got to Nashville at some point, obviously.
Yeah, I when I graduated college, I pursued this dream of songwriting, and I still had no idea that I was going to be a performer and do what I do. But I loved it. And I loved the connection of it. But I always felt very creative, and that I was going to, you know, I'm telling you, Paul, if all this goes away, I'll still be creative in some way at some point, you know. But as a kid, I really loved the process of songwriting, and that's where it started for me, you know. And then I went on the road. I got a record deal in 1992, and a couple years after I moved to Nashville, and then I'm still on the road.
But I mean, there are some people that make it pretty quickly. You did not.
No, I did not.
And then when you did, though, it was like.
What was crazy for us, and I say us and my band and crew and everybody, we weren't the new shiny toy in town. We had to work really hard, And it took a year. I was in one bus for 10 years. You know what I mean? These days, these new acts, they get a couple songs and they're in two buses. They get a song a bus. I mean, they get a bus per song, you know? So that wasn't that way for us, you know? So when it did happen, we were so much more, we were very appreciative. But when it happened, we had all this groundwork.
You were ready for it.
We were ready for it. Had it happened for us when we initially wanted it, I wouldn't be here talking to you today.
And when it did happen.
Not about my career, maybe about football, but.
You'd be the voice of the Vols.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Forget Bob Kessler.
Yeah. I love Bob Kessler.
So what, when that happened, I mean, it seemed, I mean, you're prepared because you're doing it, but I mean, it had to be overwhelming when it happens, all of a sudden you're not in the Mexican restaurant.
No, we were far away from the Mexican restaurant, and we were, I remember it was probably, I mean, what was really crazy about my career and so far about my career is I had a greatest hits record out, but nobody really knew who I was. They knew the songs, but they...
Smart, that was a good idea.
Right, but they didn't really, they hadn't, the persona and the image hadn't been, you know, they hadn't connected the dots yet. So in 2001, in 2002, when the No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problems album came out, it just all changed for us in about a 6-month period. And when it changed, we had 12 years of work that we had with us. And then when we connected those dots, and Paul, it was a different time out there for us on the road. And knock on wood,
so,
I mean, we're,
I mean, the No Shoes is just such a part of you when you're... Was that the moment that No Shoes became?
That's where the lifestyle became.
Okay.
You know, it's where they took that record and they took the idea of that and the culture of that, and I say they, I'm talking about my fans, and just ran with it. And that's where it started. It really is. And it's been an amazing thing to...
And what's the pressure like then? Because suddenly you're a major star. Crossover star, everybody's talking, and then, I mean, I don't know enough about Nashville to say this, but I will, but they don't care about the last record.
No, nobody, I mean, no. No, but I try not to think about that too much. You know, I just try to be creative and try to give the fans...
I mean, you just kept producing, though. It wasn't like you were a one-hit wonder. I mean, the stuff got better.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I just felt more creative, and when you watch your audience grow like that, and we worked very hard at making those records. And I got into a cycle where it was about every 18 months I had another record. And I'm glad I'm not in that cycle anymore, because I don't know. It took away some of the creative energy for me. But I don't know, man. Honestly, I said this in an interview a couple of days ago, like, what's happened to me and the band and our crew out there and everyone involved in my life, it feels bigger than us in a way. It feels like spiritual in nature.
It is a little bit like a revival. It's a Saturday night revival.
Yeah, and I grew up in a Baptist church, you know, and I remember, it's a lot like, I'm not saying it's like a Baptist church, but I'm just saying the spirit and the love that comes from the audience is a lot like that.
And there was one concert that I've seen the video of a million times. I can't go back in time, but I'm going to take you back. I think it was the mid 2000s when you did Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, well, that was my first stadium show ever.
I mean, it was a concert that you brought Peyton out. I mean, it's still one of those.
Yeah. Still one of my favorite
YouTube sensations.
It's still one of my, you know, not just because it was my first, but playing Neyland. I think it was 2003. That was my first stadium show ever, and. Peyton was at the show and came out, but you know, knowing the relationship that I have with my father and how many times we've sat in that stadium together watching Tennessee football, and all of a sudden you're in that space with your music, with this audience, it was a unique moment for me. You know, it was just hard to wrap my brain around it.
I mean, I've seen that 1,000 times when you say, I want to introduce, and then you say number 15. I don't think the audience really realizes what's happening yet.
Right.
And then there's Peyton Manning backing you up.
But that was a start of something, because Peyton, after that, when his once he got to the Colts, he would come out on the road with us on like a certain weekend, and this just goes to show you, it was way before social media. If this happened today, it would be everywhere instantly, right? But Peyton would be like, he would be a part of the band. Now we wouldn't plug him in. Right?
You just
but he would be up there and he had his hat on, his crazy funky hat on. He had his head down. And everybody would be kind of going, well, it kind of looks like Peyton Manning, but there's no way that's Peyton Manning. And then I would introduce the band and I would say, you know, from New Orleans, Louisiana, Peyton Manning.
Wow.
It would go crazy. But yeah, that's where that started. You know, we've had a lot of fun out there. But we'd be on the road and it would be close to training camp. And, we'd be bored out on the bus, and I said, man, let's just go find a high school field or something. I'll run a bunch of routes for you, you know, and you can get that arm, you know. He goes, no, we can't do that. He goes, because when I get back to training camp, I'll be throwing at Marvin Harrison's knees. I'll never forget that.
That's Marvin Harrison. That's the father of the guy.
Yeah,
you
the
saw
father.
Last night.
Yeah. He goes, I'll be throwing at Marvin's knees if I do that.
Wow. That is amazing. And it was after that, did you start thinking, listen, we can do better than Stokely Athletic Center. We might start doing bigger venues.
Yeah, you know, it was, and we didn't know that this was going to be our life at all.
Yeah.
You know, but that was just, we thought that we were going to start there. And it's still, like I said, Paul, that was the night that started the idea that maybe we could, you know, do this other places. And the next year, no, 2 years later, we played, it was our first show at Foxborough, our first show at what was then called Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, and then at the Eagles Stadium in Philadelphia. And then the next year, it was everywhere. Yeah.
And
that was 2007.
And you've just, and at every one of these stops, Foxborough has become one of your most prominent, you know, you've been, you know, obviously the Kraft family's embraced you, the whole
Yeah, we're doing three nights there this year at the end of the show, and that'll be our 24th play there.
Obviously you're interested in sports and Peyton, but what is that? Is the doing the stadiums all of a sudden the intersection between you and?
Well, when we released Boys of Fall, that changed a lot for me, you know, in the sports world.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. That's quite a story that. That Kenny ends up literally being at the dinner table of every famous bull face in the world. Kenny Chesney in the studio with us. I'm still freaking out saying that, but we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are back, and I feel like I'm at a Kenny Chesney concert, because with each song, I know it's just that much closer to the encore in the end, and I don't want it to end. I want to get into what we were talking about a minute ago, because you've done a lot of being on the other side of the camera. You produced a couple of films for ESPN, but the one that really got so much attention, in addition to Condridge and the one about the broadcasters, was The Boys of Fall, and it's such a fascinating story, and I'm gonna let you tell it.
Well, that was a song that was written by my friend Casey Beathard, and Casey's father was Bobby Beathard. And so there was a core football family involved in that. But when I got it, when I got that song, I just couldn't believe it, because that was the DNA of how I grew up in outside of Knoxville. It had family, it had community, it had sports, it had everything. And so when we started, after I recorded it and we started to think about what we wanted to do with it, I went, wow, I mean, this is like, this is such a broad, my brain started going crazy. And then all of a sudden I started reaching out to people to see if they wanted to talk about football. And not necessarily about the song, but just about their life and football. And that's where the Boys of Fall was created. And Paul, I swear to God, the next thing you know, I am in the living rooms of all these people that I've seen on TV interviewing them. I mean, I'm in Bobby Bowden's house. I'm in Nick Saban's house. I'm in Joe Namath's house.
Wow.
And we talked, just like you and I are talking, for almost 2.5 hours, just about football and about life and what we were able to make with that film. I mean, I remember I there was a guy at ESPN at the time named John Walsh, and we sat and watched the first cut of Boys of Fall, and I swear to God, it was 5 hours long. He goes, you've got to cut it down a little bit. But I didn't. I had all these iconic people. You know, when you're sitting in front of Nick Saban and he starts philosophizing about football, you don't want to stop the camera at all.
We're only here for 3 minutes.
That's right. So, but it was one of the highlights. That was, you know, that song was a big song for me, but the Boys of Fall moment, when you add in the film and the relationships that it started for me, it was one of the career and life highlights, especially, you know, growing up with your father and you're watching all these people on TV. And so now when you come to my show, it's 9 times out of 10, you're going to see music people at the show, but there's going to be sports people everywhere. And that all started a little bit before Boys of Fall. But once Boys of Fall happened, there was a lot of sports people coming to our shows.
And again, from playing at the White House, you've played all over the world. You've played in front of everyone but it seems like, if I could put words in your mouth, that those are the guys that you just go crazy over.
Well, and I really respect them.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, when you pull these sports guys up on stage, you know, some of them thrive in the moment and some of them, they're really scared. And to see that, it has always, I don't know, it's always made me wonder why, because they're on the biggest stages in the world. But when you get them out of their element and put a microphone on them.
But they have 11, they have 10 people around them.
Yeah, right. But it's you know, the Boys of Fall part of my life is still one of my, I don't know, just because I love the game so much and to sit with all the people that we talk to and to become friends with them and to know their families has been one of the highlights of my career.
And then you've done these a couple of different films. Is that something? I mean, I realize I'm not sure how you fit that into everything else you're doing, but
yeah,
it seems like you've done it really
that
well.
That was our first one. And then within the Boys of Fall film, we talked to Condrich Holloway. And then the folks at the ESPN, his name was John Dahl. And John called me and he goes, we're going to start this thing called The Year of the Quarterback. And we want you to make a film. You and your filmmaker, Sean Silva, we want you to make a film on Condrich Holloway and his journey. And that was really a thrill to do. And then that led to us making a film about Steve Spurrier. And then, which was a blast to do, and I got to really know him a lot.
He's a Tennessee boy.
Yeah, and so we had a lot of connections, you know, and so hanging with Steve for a couple months to make that film was a big thrill, man. It really was, you know, so, but he had been coming to shows, you know, for years, so I felt like I already knew him.
We're talking to Kenny Chesney as if you needed me to say that, but that's mandated in the industry. That is so interesting. There was a moment where I thought every time I'd look up on ESPN, you were on more shows than Stephen A. Smith.
That's not true. But there was a moment there where we had a few things.
But I mean, the relationships. I love that part of it though, because you. I mean, I've heard you on some of your records, on some of your films. And there is a long line of bold faces in your crowds that you, I don't know how you have time to talk to them all, I don't know how you can engage with them all, but you do.
Well, you know, that's, every night is different for us, you know, but, you know, when we have all these people that I love and respect come to the show and want to be a part of the experience, You know, like last week in Tampa, I mean, I looked outside of the bus, and we call it the Sock Monkey Lounge, and that's our area outside the bus where we have our guests. And there was Herb Street was there, Dabo Swinney was there, Urban Meyer was there, Dan Mullen was there.
Oh my goodness!
All in one spot. They were all just out there having a blast, and I went, wow, I can't believe all these people are here. It was a lot of fun, you know, but they're there because they love the music and love the experience of it all.
So when you were here a couple of years ago, you told me something, and I should have known it, but it stuck with me, because your tours always end, not so surprisingly, before the football season starts.
I did tell you that. That's right. And that's by design. It really is. I mean, I've learned my lesson. Like before we came back on the air, I've learned what works for me, and I've learned what doesn't work for me. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is that you do not compete with football. Now, especially SEC football. But when you're touring in the fall and you're going to play a Friday and Saturday night, well, there's a whole lot of people that's going to have to make a choice. Okay, am I going to go watch my son play football, or am I going to go to this guy's show? So I decided, no, we're not going to do that. My life is pretty much like a baseball season. It is. It starts in April and ends, you know, right around the 1st of September. This year, I think it ends August 26th in Foxborough. But it's a lot like a baseball season. That's by design.
Which begs the obvious question, what happens to you once the football season starts?
Once football season starts, I shake all the road dust off of me, and I go jump in the ocean in the Virgin Islands. I have a place there, and I've got this big open air bar, and there's got four big screen TVs on each corner, and I've got a different game on every TV. That's right, and I look forward to it. You know, I love consuming sports, especially when my tour is over. You know, I love it. You know, I watch Game Day. I watch your show. I watch all of it. You know, and I don't know. I just that was a part of my DNA growing up where I grew up. You know, and that's something me and my father have in
games,
common.
Because I would think it's difficult, but I did see you from a distance 2 years ago at a fairly famous game for Tennessee graduates up in Knoxville.
That's right. Yeah, I was there, and. I was there with me and Peyton, and there was a lot of people there. It was a fun. That was the first game I've been to in a while. But wow, what a game!
You had a couple other country celebrities with you.
There was Kelsey Ballerini was with me. Morgan Wallen was there.
Did Morgan Wallen go to the same high school you went to?
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
It really is unbelievable. I mean, he walked down the same hallway as, you know, ate in the same cafeteria. It was years.
There's so many things I could say here, but I'm going to be quiet.
But when Morgan was, this is not. We haven't really talked about this at all, but when I'm a little bit older than Morgan, but when he was a senior in high school, the high school that we went to won the state championship in baseball, and I helped them get their championship rings. Now you fast forward all these years later, he's telling me we're talking about that. You know, it's like it's crazy. There was a lot of people at that Bama game.
I can see another Kenny Chesney film, but you and Morgan going back to school.
Maybe.
Back to Gibbs.
Stranger things have happened.
And then some kids say, hey, Morgan, who's that guy with you?
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, it was such an amazing day in Knoxville. And when I saw the picture of you later, it was it's funny. I mentioned that a couple weeks later. Mm-hmm. We were in Athens, and one of the people that are opening for you tomorrow, Megan Maroney, was there, and I was telling her. I was telling her about the picture, because she was, you know, she was wearing her Georgia colors in Athens, which was fairly annoying. While she was sitting there talking about Tennessee Orange, but that is a very famous picture in Tennessee folklore of all of you, Morgan, Kelsey, and Peyton.
Well, and that was that. I think what's it called? Peyton has something
Calhoun,
at a bar there.
The graduate. Okay.
So I want you guys to come.
That's on the strip.
It's on the strip. Yeah. Because I want you guys to come hang out before the game. So we did, and whew, man, that was a good decision and a bad decision.
We got time. I'd like to know more about that.
Well, I just, you know, the game was a lot of fun because we went there. I'll just say that. It was so much fun.
How can you watch? I mean, I realize you're probably not sitting in section DD, but I mean, it's still.
No, we were up in a box.
I mean, yeah, but it's still, there's still plenty of people up there.
Yeah, I don't necessarily love being in the box because you can't really hear it. I'd have much rather had been out in the crowd. I remember as a kid, man, it's crazy about walking back into that stadium, what you remember. But I went to, as a child, there was still a dear friend of mine today. His name's Jim Cogdell, and he owned a Dodge dealership in Knoxville. And me and my father sat with him in double K, yeah. Section double K, row one, right behind the goalpost. And when I walked into that game, you know, I hadn't been in that stadium in forever. And when I walked into that game, I just, my brain, my head, my memories, everything went right to double K, row one. You know, I watched so many football games and you know, when Steve Spurrier was coaching at Duke, I was at that game. And to think that later on in your life that you're going to get to know that person, you know what I mean?
And do a film about
it. And do a film about their life. It's crazy. You don't think that as a child. So, but yeah, that was a fun game to be at.
A quick break in our final moments because this guy does have a job and he has to get to a stadium to look at. But one more moment with Kenny Chesney on just an incredible, never forget Friday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
A couple of minutes left, and so here we are. You're 26, 27, 8 hours before concert.
Right.
There'll be 8 million people out there. What do you? I mean, you go to the stadium before. Obviously, you do a sound check.
But I do.
You tell me more about what you do once you get there.
Yeah, I've learned a lot over the years about what doesn't work for me, and that's pretty important. Every Friday night, when we do a football stadium, it's a Saturday night show, so I call Friday night a school night. Right. So I don't the band and the crew, once their Friday's done, they'll go out and do whatever. But
we were
I'm in bed
about last night.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But I've learned that I can't do both anymore. Right. So I prioritize and the show is always most important. So a Friday night's a school night. I'll eat really early. I go to bed really early and I'll wake up in the morning and I'll probably work out at the Panthers facility. And then it's game day. Right. And those hours after, like, from 12 to about 3 are the most mundane.
That's a long day.
It's a long day. There's only so many times you can walk from the back of the bus to the front of the bus and then think that you're going to do it again and see something different the next time. You know. So it's at those hours are really hard. But
When you get out there, though, and there are a lot of great entertainers. I mean, Bruce Springsteen might be one of those who connects. There's so many others who do. Taylor Swift's tour, but you have a connection. You talk to the audience the whole show.
There is a connection during songs. Yeah, during songs. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things over the years that I'm very proud of how we built our audience. It came from a very organic place. I talk a lot before social media. It was built of a place of people coming to the show and next year bringing more people back. And it was before TikTok and before.
You want to take people in for however many hours they're there.
Yeah.
You don't want them thinking about anything other than music.
No. And it's just such an amazing feeling for us to be up there and to be a conductor, if you will. And that's how it feels. It feels, like I said earlier also, it feels bigger than us. You know, the music, I feel like that I'm the person that actually was sent here to sing those songs. I didn't write all those songs, but I just feel like a messenger to them. It's crazy. But when you're up there in front of all those people and you see how this music and these songs have been such a big part of their life, and now we're at a place, Paul, where, you know, when I first started in my 20s out on the road, those people that were there, now they have kids that come. we're all of a sudden there, you know, and that's been beautiful to see. So tomorrow night when we play the Panthers place, it's going to be rocking, man. And we feel so fortunate. You know, we all live in such a place of gratitude out here and feel so fortunate to have music in our life and to be doing this the way we're doing it. And I brought something.
Okay.
And I forgot, and I apologize, when we did the show about all the SEC radio announcers, I sent you a helmet, but there's updated version, and it's a little gift to say thank you for having me on the show, and I appreciate you, man. I watch every day.
I will never be able to thank you. I don't have a helmet, but please accept all of our thanks for you taking the time. This is
one of the thrills of all time. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Kenny Chesney, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.